This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Not getting anything. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Food for Thought on WTPL, the Pulse 1077. I am Mike Moore and Carol Lawrence, owner of the Red Arrow Diner and co-host of this fine show on food, is away today. And in her seat, well, actually, I'm in her seat because I got to run the controls. Carrie Lehman is here, and Carrie joined us as a guest host not that long ago. She is the founder and owner of Tidewater Catering Group, Waterworks Cafe in the Wambeck Mill, Bayona Cafe in the Jefferson Mill, and soon the Unity Cafe, Sundial Ave, correct?
That is correct.
So, I mean, if you keep buying, you know, these starting all these new restaurants, we'll have half the show just introducing you and what you're doing these
days. We'll have to limit that, cut that back.
No, don't do that. You've created some good dining, and you figured out, apparently, what the recipe is for serving this interesting niche of business on the riverfront, because many tried and many did not succeed, but you have seemed to have flourished in this realm.
I attribute a lot of that to my ears. You have to listen, you have to pay attention, you have to adapt, and it's ever-changing. I mean, we were talking off-air about how things in all industries change, and adapting to that is critical in succeeding and continuing.
So that is Carrie's background. Another wonderful entrepreneur joining us a little later in the show, in fact, in about 15 minutes, and that is Amy LaBelle, who, along with her husband Caesar, are the founders and own LaBelle Winery in Amherst on Route 101, and they've turned that into not only a place to make wine and things, but the event center has really become a community meeting place for so many different events and things that happen. So we're going to catch up with Amy LaBelle. And then for those of you that would like to get back to basics and get your food directly from the farmer onto your table, that day will be coming soon in Manchester. Stephen Freeman, board member of the Manchester Food Co-op, joining us in the 1 o'clock hour. And we'll also wrap up the show with a little visit from our friends at New Hampshire Make-A-Wish. So lots to talk about today, Carrie, and this is your second appearance. So, of course, you were very relaxed the first time around.
I'm enjoying this.
You should be doing this.
The headphones
except there's
fit
no
really
money.
Well.
Oh, yeah. Well, being that you're a restaurant owner, I'd like to begin some conversation with the latest stats that have been done of the research on millennials who love to dine out. Now, I don't know if you have looked at your crowd, the people that come to your restaurants, and have figured that out, because I don't really know what the demographic is for the restaurants that you have.
Well, I'll tell you, it changes by the day, by the weather, but your stats I'm very interested in hearing, because I think this has a lot to do with just our culture changing how they conduct themselves day in and day out, by hour and hour. Our work pace is different. I'm really interested to see what's going to happen July 1st with hands-free driving, too, because we're all so used to. So this is all just us adapting and being different now.
Well, we have to do that, because if you don't adapt, you get left behind.
That's absolutely correct.
So you say that your customer base changes, and I don't know if there's kind of a focus point that when you think of what you want to do in your mind, you kind of have to know who you want to appeal to, right?
Yeah, we're all our flagship cafes here, which are Waterworks, Bayona, and soon to be Unity, really are focusing on the work individual who finds themselves multitasking all day long, and calling ahead for lunch and being able to come down and grab it and leave is key. Every minute is money. And for these individuals, we want to provide the most healthy, affordable, and delicious option that they can get as quick as they possibly can get as close to their office. And that's what has a lot to do with the geography of where we've put these cafes. You know, certainly people have commented how Bayona and Waterworks are both on Commercial Street. But for those who have worked or visited Commercial Street, know the opposite ends could virtually be two different ends of the city. It's parking can be daunting, and our time is important. So we are focusing on the workforce. Now, on Saturdays, things are a little different. We deal with a little more of the families who are a little more casual, but that makes it fun for us.
It really has been an underserved area till you came in and figured out what works. Well, I mean, you have Cotton between your two places.
Who does a great job, certainly.
They do a great job, but they can't be all things to all people in the way that you are.
Well, ironically, we got a call from a group at Franklin Pierce College, and they're having 3 weekend-long seminars. And these are all adults that are coming from out of state, staying in local hotels, and they're getting accreditation for a discipline that they have. And the classes are all day, but they're not providing lunch for them. So lunch in our industry is called like lunch on own. Well, where would 100 people go on Saturday and Sunday when they have 25 minutes for lunch? So we have decided to open the cafe for the weekend for them to accommodate them. And the beauty of what we're doing is we're able to do that. So thankfully, the woman from Franklin Pierce shouted out to me and said, what are your thoughts here? But could you imagine 100 people walking into Cotton? And Jeff would choke. I mean, that's just
you would.
That's an awful even thing. Well, and that's not what a restaurant's about. That's not what they're meant to do. So,
all right. So it's tough to really put an age group specifically into your situation, because you've kind of steered your business toward a business and a lifestyle and a very specific need. And ages are all over the place. Millennials, who are born between 1980 and 2000, make up 25% of our population right now.
That
is a huge group, and they are speaking loudly about their dining preferences. Mm-hmm. And for anybody that has that as their focus demographic, of course, some of those people are only 15 years old, mm-hmm. but they will be your customers in the not-too-distant future. So here's what they are finding out. This comes from Restaurant Marketing Labs. So they make up 25% of the population. 55% of millennials, again, who are between 35 and 15 years of age, prefer communal tables, like you might see in a bed and breakfast, mm-hmm. or are at least open to that.
Right.
Whereas perhaps other older age groups want their own private yep. table. So you're shaking your head as if that makes some sense
it
to
you. Does. It does. You see it in the behavior, especially at Bayona, mm-hmm. where we have mm-hmm. these large tables. Okay. And you look over, and people are grouping together that may not know each other. So mm-hmm. it's pretty interesting to see.
Well, maybe these will be surprises, maybe these will not. 80% of millennials who are surveyed here in the Restaurant Marketing Lab study, 80% want to know how their food was grown.
Wow.
So the farm-to-table movement and the fact that seems to be more transparency in your business, I think, is going in the right direction, because people want to know these things.
I don't disagree with that. That ties into the whole nutritional content. And I don't think these folks, I don't think that speaks to necessarily sanitary issues,
okay.
but I think it speaks more to the origination and, again, the farm-to-table movement, as you say. A lot of it has to do with the awareness now that folks are getting of the quality of their food and the nutritional value of their food, and the things that you and I, Mike, might have eaten 15 years ago that we mm-hmm. thought were delicious, we're now finding don't necessarily have the nutritional value that perhaps our parents told us they did, or vice versa. The things that we didn't want to eat at all are now really the best things for us,
yes.
i.e. spinach. That's a shout out to my family. I didn't want to eat that. But I think it really has. I mean, think of quinoa. No one knew what quinoa was.
I know. It was still just a few years
right,
ago.
Right, certainly. And people still are mispronouncing
quinoa?
It.
Right.
So, and all these super grains and these Moroccan mm-hmm. grains are becoming quite prevalent.
All right, let's move on to the other things that millennials prefer. And by the way, they are spending more money per capita than any other age group in terms of dining out. An average millennial is spending $174 a month dining out in restaurants like yours and others versus $153 a month for the rest of the population.
Well, I think when you're younger, having no children of my own, I have a little more disposable time in the evening, and mm-hmm. I don't have to make those family meals. And to treat myself, I go out to eat. And I would say that age group supports that they're not necessarily going home and turning their grill on, but they'd rather go to a local restaurant and see what's new. There's so many great restaurants too. I mean, from here to Portsmouth, I mean, the list is unbelievable.
Well, and clearly the demand is there based on these stats.
Absolutely.
For the young and up and coming generation. As we know, no surprise here, the millennials are a very tech dependent. 68% are unfazed by celebrity endorsements. They don't care if, Julia Roberts is selling makeup or name a famous chef, Bobby Flay selling Faye yogurt. They don't care.
They're going to buy it based on their own knowledge of it.
That's right.
Interesting.
So that's not good for people that make their money for celebrity endorsements. That's stat. 56% of millennials will switch brands for a cents off coupon.
Say that again?
56% will switch brands. In other words, if they were loyal to one brand, if they can get a 10% or a 10 cent off coupon for another brand,
they will switch.
They'll make the jump. In other words, the brand loyalty may not be there if you're going to give them dangling carrots.
So value is important. That's how I
important.
Underscore that as value,
yes.
which I That's an awesome stat.
And finally, many will share their location because, you know, sometimes on your smartphone will say, do you want to tell us where you're at, what your location is? And I typically don't. But it says most will share their location if it means getting a coupon or some money off from a local nearby restaurant.
Oh, I corroborate with that. There is no doubt about that. I think that it's tying in the coolness of where you are and being able to share that with someone, mm-hmm. look at me, but then to be rewarded for that, it's built-in marketing.
Sure. So any surprises in there?
Well, being the age I am, not a millennial, some of the tech stuff is daunting to me. I'm not, again, mm-hmm. going to ping where I am and zing where I'm not. but I think there's a lot to be said about the difference between loyalty and value. Mm-hmm. And I think what the shout out is to restaurant owners and hospitality folks is just because you think you have them, maybe you don't. So don't let your guard down. Mm-hmm. Stay smart. Stay current. Stay sharp. I think that's a huge message to restaurateurs.
Yeah, and if you're thinking of starting a restaurant, when you consider one quarter of the population fits into that demographic, that might be something to consider versus, baby boomers, which mm-hmm. I'm a part of that mm-hmm. generation, or whatever the younger group is now. That I don't think we've even figured out the people who are under 15, what to call them.
Well, Mike, I also think we have to remember these coupons are not necessarily ones that you're cutting out of a paper anymore.
True.
And I think a lot of it has to do with you can now go to Michael's, the craft store, and just flash your phone. So mm-hmm. there's not that perhaps social stigma of opening your old little coupon book that my grandmother used to have and pulling out your so it's a little more slick. You just flash it to the screen or flash mm-hmm. it to their reader board and it's done, and really no one around you has to know, but you feel good about that purchase. So that's an incredible stat.
Well, there you go. Again, that is from Restaurant Marketing Labs. All about millennials and what they love to do when it comes to restaurants, and that they are spending more than almost everybody else. It is 12:25. This is Food for Thought, our opening segment. A little later on, if we have some time, you found some disturbing but interesting information about eggs and the prices, where they may be going, that people may not be aware of. So we need to find a place to tuck that in and share some conversation of. But we've invited Amy LaBelle of LaBelle Winery in, and her story is a fascinating one, and her business is a thriving one. Another successful entrepreneur doing well in New Hampshire. And we'll talk to Amy here in just a couple of moments when we come back on the Pulse WTPL. It's Food for Thought. Be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Hello and welcome back to Food for Thought on the Pulse WTPL, where it is 12:30. I'm Mike Moore, and Carol Lawrence is off today. She'll be back tomorrow. Our show is brought to you by Fallon's Furniture, the official decorator of our green room for Food for Thought, and Kale & Company, and New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, newenglandcoffee.com. And if you haven't heard, New Hampshire Day is coming up at Fenway Park Sunday, and the Pulse has your tickets. Join Peter St. James for a live broadcast at the Bond Auto Parts location, 1109 Hooksett Road in Hooksett, from 9 to noon. We'll have five pairs to give away of tickets for the game, New Hampshire Day. But you have to stop by. Also take entries. Come by during your lunch hour, Peter St. James, from 9 until noon Friday. We're being joined today by Carrie Lehman. As I mentioned, Carol Lawrence is away. And in the studio, another successful entrepreneur who's become somebody who is sort of a go-to person, I think, for those looking to get into business in the food, hospitality, or in this case, beverage industry, for the most part. And that's Amy LaBelle, who, along with her husband, Caesar, have run LaBelle Winery now for, is it 10 years?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. About 10 years?
Yeah, we've been around about 10 years, just 2.5 years in our new location in Amherst on Route 101.
So tell me what the number 4,083 means to you.
Oh, you did your research.
Of course.
we often joke that it took me 4,083 days to get the front doors of the winery open in our new location. And don't do the math. That's about 12 and a quarter years. And you know, it's a nice way to remind people how long and arduous the entrepreneurial path it really is. I dreamed about building a grand world-class winery for many, many years before it was reality in 3D, a place I could walk into. And I'm just so grateful to be there every day.
Would it have happened if you hadn't taken that vacation to Nova Scotia, or would it have happened perhaps later?
I always have had an entrepreneurial spirit, so I think I would have started a business somewhere along the line. You know, I had a full career prior to being a winemaker and business owner. I was an attorney, so I already was fully into that career, of course. My parents are partners in their own business, and so the entrepreneurial spirit is deeply embedded in my blood. So it's likely I would have started a business, but I am ever so grateful that I had that kind of lightning bolt moment that led me down the proper path, which was to being a winemaker.
As opposed to being a Music City Hall Rockette, which I know was also something earlier on your bucket list.
Wow. Facebook tells all.
Darn it. Yeah, that was an early dream. That would have been cool. But unfortunately, you have to be 5'9 to be a Rockette. And I'm not.
Oh, is that right?
I'm quite short.
Oh.
Well, 5'9". That's not most of us.
Even in heels, that's not me.
Yeah, that's not going to happen for me either. So,
well, then maybe I got a shot.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it's great to have two entrepreneurs in the studio who I greatly respect. Carrie, we all know what she's accomplished. You certainly have done very well. It must be gratifying to see that that you've created your own glass ceiling and busted through it, really, in a manner of speaking, and have maybe exceeded what you ever had in those dreams. Although I don't know, I think you dream big, Amy.
I always say if your dreams aren't scaring you, they're not big enough.
Oh, let me write that one down.
That's a great fear. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, it's the dream was big. Definitely, it was the entire winery was in the dream. You know, from the restaurant to the events to the farm to table. Movement that we have going on at the winery and the farm itself. You know, we've got 4 acres, 3 of grapes, 1 of vegetables that service the restaurant. So that was all in the original dream. So I guess it was a really big dream. And that's why it took me those 4,083 days to break it down, you know, one day at a time, one step at a time. So I think it's a nice lesson to people so they know that even if the dream's really big, if you break it down into tiny bites, you know, it's achievable.
Well, you have to have patience. And I think that you're a living example of that. Nothing's going to happen overnight. And I think for all people out there that want to open a restaurant, that instant gratification is not going to happen. It takes a long time. Now, you just opened something at the outlets, the premium outlets. And I was there on a brief little twirl through that I had some moments to myself. And I got there too late on a day, but the place was packed.
Thank you.
It was great. So what inspired you to do that?
Yeah. So, you know, I love to make wine, right? But I also love to cook. And so I've always developed a lot of recipes that involved wine in the cooking. And so a new brand, The Winemaker's Kitchen, has been born of that. So it's a whole line of products that helps you either cook with wine or that has wine in it.
Very smart.
Things that we make at the winery.
Very smart. And you sell those same things in your store,
yes.
But you're giving people another venue. And what a great captured audience for those. I mean, I don't know the last time you've been to the Merrimack Outlets, but it's never quiet. I mean, and there's all sorts of ethnicities and families and young people and old people.
And tourists.
So, right, exactly. So what a great way to say, hey, have you heard about us? And of course, the tourists love local things. So
yes,
you're
they do.
Screaming out as, you know.
Well, the other thing we've been able to do in that store is to showcase New Hampshire artists, New Hampshire artisans in other ways.
Nice.
So, for example, we're showcasing the New Hampshire Prison Program where they are creating pieces of art in wood. And so we're supporting the New Hampshire Prison Program through that store and you know, showcasing other small businesses in New Hampshire that make products that we want to carry.
That's very neat. Total sidebar to that, I have a table in the Riverside Room that my brother got at an antique store in Hoboken, New Jersey, 20 years ago. It was in his attic. It was completely fallen apart. And our culinary director said to me, oh, send it to the New Hampshire prison and they'll rehabilitate it. And I said, you got to be kidding. So now it wasn't overnight. I mean, it probably took them 3 months.
How does anybody know that?
I had to bring it. And it was funny. You know, I had to go through the, you know, all the checks and balances of, you know, my background check. And I drop it off and they give me a wood chip and they say, you know, what do you want it to look like? 90 days later, they call it's ready. I pay them. I was astounded at the craftsmanship. It is a stunning table. And I comment to people all the time about it.
I think New Hampshire Furniture Masters lead that program.
And you know what? That's actually a very good point. That's a very cool program they have there. Mm-hmm. But good for you for reaching. That's awesome.
So why is something like that important to growing your brand and becoming a bigger part of the community? Because I was not aware of that. And here both of you have had your feelers into that to some degree.
I'll let you take the lead on that.
Well, for LaBelle Winery, the involvement in community, the giving back to community is an integral part of our mission. So I would say that it isn't kind of a side job for what we do. It actually is an impetus for our growth. We want to grow the winery. We want to be successful. We want to be profitable so that we can give back more. So it's from day one, 10 years ago, it's always been ingrained in our programs.
DNA, yeah.
Yeah, it's in the company's culture. And so it's one of the reasons we want to succeed so that we can give back and get involved in community and continue that charitable outreach. We think it's really important.
Well, Amy, I'm sure most should know that you live in the community as well. And that's important that those of us who have businesses here, we're not driving over the state lines to Vermont or to Maine or to Massachusetts to a home where we're not part of the community. We're shopping, we're schooling our kids, we're worshiping, we're doing things in the community with the people that we also hope give us, the respect to try our products. So that's an important factor. I mean,
it's
you're touching
really
a lot
point.
Of pieces.
Yeah, it's a great point, Carrie. You know, we live in Amherst, where our business is. Our children are in the schools in Amherst. We are worshiping in Amherst.
As I always say, there's no place to hide.
Nope.
There you go. Well, I know that making wine was your first love. That was kind of the spark that lit everything else that you're progressing with now. So growing wine in New Hampshire, I should say growing grapes in New Hampshire to produce wine is perhaps a little more challenging than, say, California or other parts of the country. How is it, though, that the Niagara wine region seems to be flourishing so fabulously? You drive through there and it seems like there's 100 wineries. Their
yeah,
weather's
absolutely.
No better than ours.
No, absolutely. So thanks for the question. It's a great jumping off point to help educate your listeners about northern wine grapes. Advances in grape technology, grape growing, have made it possible over the last 10 to 15 years to grow excellent, excellent quality wine grapes in northern states and in northern countries. So Canada grows a lot. It's a matter of selecting the proper grape. So we have 7 grapes on property in Amherst. They're all cold hardy, so they're all capable of growing to 29 degrees below zero. And I had 2 nights this winter that were negative 16, so I was real glad for that negative 29 certification.
Wow.
But that makes it possible for us to sleep semi-well at night knowing that the grapes are okay through the winter, especially when they had the snow cover that the grapes had this winter, because that actually insulates them
right.
nicely
sure, yeah.
from the wind.
Yeah, did some of those grapes come from the New York region that you planted, or where did they come from?
Many of them are grown in the New York region. I actually purchased our rootstock from a farm in Vermont that specializes in breeding these cold hardy grapes. Now, these grapes maybe aren't always grapes that everybody knows the names of.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really open your mind to try something new. So you're not going to be able to, although we do make Chardonnay, which is, common. I get the grapes for the Chardonnay in New York because I can't grow them here. It's too cold. But you have to open up your mind to new varieties, things you've never tried. And isn't that the best thing to do? Come to a winery and try a grape you've never heard of, like Sauval Blanc, which is a descendant of Sauvignon Blanc, which you may have heard of. Try it. You may love it. You never know. So you don't have to stick to those wines that you're familiar with.
I will say I have tried that. You sell that at the Palace Theater.
I do.
Yes, I have tried it there. It's excellent.
You know,
funny you should say that, because I think that ties into those out there that are brewmasters and have that same daunting task of people saying to them, well, which one tastes like Budweiser? Right. And so you want to say, come on, folks. So get out of your comfort zone.
Yes.
I think that's a good message. But you do tastings in your restaurant. So that's got to get people over that hump.
Yeah. So, it's the easiest thing to do, especially if you don't know anything about wine. You know, we get so many people that come to the winery almost apologetic and saying, oh, I don't know anything about wine. I'm so sorry. And, we say, great, we're approachable. Come in with your questions.
You're
we'll
exactly
teach you.
Who I want.
Yeah, absolutely. I want you to know about wine. It's just a beverage. It doesn't have to be quite as highfalutin as people
Absolutely.
Have made
well
it.
And let's face it, even just saying a Cabernet grape, I mean, a Cabernet grape says 100 different things to 100 different people. We could sit here and probably between us rattle off 40 different winemakers that carry Cabernet, and they all would probably despise the fact that their wines are like the other. So it's about opening their eyes to something new. But you're right in the middle of so much to do there. And when you have events there, people are able to try your wines there as well.
Yes.
I participated, or I was invited rather, to Cisco Food Service had a, I guess you call it an industry tasting. And what they do is for people who buy their product from Cisco Food Service, they'll set up different stations of food, and they had it at Amy's event room at LaBelle. And we, you matched wines to each of the stations. So as we were, they were showcasing a new duck confit, or they were showcasing a new crawfish, Amy's team matched wines to it. So what a cool way to be able to say this was, you know, a different wine with a different food. So it was a great message on both sides of the scale.
Thank you.
It was
yeah,
a lot
that
of fun.
Was a fun event.
And I got a tour that day too.
Of the wine cellar?
I got a tour of everything.
Awesome.
And I love the bridal suite.
Thank you.
That was awesome. I was like, this is like a little slice of heaven up here. I loved it. No, yeah. It was really nice. And the wine cellar, you do events down there. You allow people to have a cocktail party next to the tanks.
Yes, we do.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a really unique space.
Yes.
It's a very special place to have a
wonderful
party.
Now we have to take a quick break and come back talking with Amy LaBelle of LaBelle Winery and, of course, Carrie Lehman from her various restaurants and Tidewater Catering Group. We'll be back with more conversation here on Food for Thought. It is 1243 WTPL The Pulse. Be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 1077 The Pulse.
It's Food for Thought, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. 1247, I'm Mike Moore, and our show brought to you by Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory-smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue on 2nd Street in Manchester. Also, Grasshopper's Garden Center, where the customer comes first, 728 New River Road in New Boston. Online at grasshoppersgardencenter.com. My co-host today is Carrie Lehman, and our guest for the next few moments, rounding out the hour, is Amy LaBelle. LaBelle's winery, along with her husband Caesar, have been running a growing and thriving business that becomes a little bit more complicated as the years go on, as you add things that you see necessary. So now that we've talked about your retail space and the fact that you have retail space at the outlet malls and you're at the Palace Theater, and you know you're aware of the prison woodworking. I mean the whole deal. So what is next? I'm gonna guess maybe an inn and a spa. Is that somewhere in that big bubble over your head?
Yeah, the bubble is big. there are a lot of dreams still to be realized there. We hope to continue to grow our business in Amherst. I would love to have an inn and a spa. I think it just makes sense.
Well, it's a natural progression.
Absolutely.
I would
Absolutely.
Think.
It makes sense. The property across the street is for sale. You never know what might happen. We'll see. We would also really love to make beer and distill on the property. And so I have a high interest in making bourbon and very good quality vodka and brandies. So that we make a lot of port wine at the winery as well. And I have to buy that brandy currently. I'd really like to be able to make my own so that I could control that end-to-end
have
product.
Have you been practicing at home or are you, you and your husband?
That would be illegal, sir.
Oh, well, this is off the record, man. and you are an attorney. I don't know if you're still licensed or
I
not,
sure
but,
am.
But you are trained and you know what you can and cannot say.
So right. No, I just drink. I just drink it at home.
I see. But I mean, starting out years ago, when you were thinking about doing this, didn't you make wine at home? I mean, was that...
Absolutely. You're actually allowed as a citizen to make 200 gallons of wine a year at home for your own personal consumption.
In New Hampshire? Or
federal law.
That's so a federal everywhere. Law?
Yes. And clearly, home brewing is allowed. Home brewing in, for beer is a huge... I mean, I know people who do it all the time, have barbecues on the weekend, and
sure.
Try my beer, and I ask, does it taste like Budweiser? No, I don't. No, I don't. No, I don't. Well, my brother works for Anheuser-Busch. I'd be in big trouble if I didn't say that.
Yes. So beer is possibly on the agenda, huh?
Yes.
Craft beers?
Yes, definitely.
You can experiment with that at home, can
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
All right, so.
And we do.
What have you made that you like so far?
You know, we're always playing with flavors at LaBelle. Mm-hmm. So we love blending. We love infusing flavor that wasn't there before. So you asked about beer, but I'm going to talk about a wine for 1 second. We make, for example, a wine called Dulce, and that is a grape called Vidal Blanc. That is a cold, hardy grape. But rather than just producing Vidal Blanc, I wanted to see what would happen if I fermented it on top of cinnamon sticks and vanilla beans. And so this is the way our innovation works at LaBelle. So we like to kind of play around. So I can see that will end up translating into the beer making as well. You know, a lot of blending, a lot of interesting developments to come.
We had conversation, Carrie and I, with you as you walked in. That I guess the unanticipated part of this great growth and success you've had is the fact that now you have a sizable staff, and that's a whole new wrinkle in running your business.
It definitely is. You know, when you have a dream to make wine and to, you know, achieve worldwide wine domination, you kind of discount along the way that you're going to need a lot of really good people to help you do that. And it's not just anybody. You have to have people that really understand your dream and your vision and who can mesh well with the rest of your team. So we have 70 employees at LaBelle Winery now. That's more people than I ever thought I'd be managing. And with that comes great responsibility. You know, I want to provide a good job with a good pay and good benefits packages and opportunities for personal growth. I want to invest in those people who do understand the dream and who can grow with us. And so we take that very seriously. That's a big responsibility and one that I hadn't anticipated.
Carrie, you probably run across that as well. I sense from you that you feel this great responsibility to make sure that your employees are well cared for, because that in turn feeds back into your success.
Well, there's no one who owns a business that won't tell you that the most important asset you have are the people that are around you. And I just ironically had a staff meeting Friday, and I made a comment about how the staff doesn't need to take care of me. It's not about necessarily showing me what you can do. It's showing our customers, because if our customers and our guests and our patrons are happy, that's going to in turn build this business. You know, unlike you, Amy, my name, my formal name is not attached to Tidewater, but at the same token, it is me. I can't disassociate myself with Tidewater or with these cafes. So I tell them that they hold a piece of my reputation in their hands every day. I try to also say to them, would you do something or would you act in a certain way if this was your parents' business, if this was your business, if you were throwing a party for your significant other? Would you do these things? And if you in the back of your head can say, yes, I would, then I trust you. But there's also a lot of age issues with the youth that we hire, and do they understand the entrepreneurial perspective? Some of them don't. Our industry can be very transient, where people are doing this to get from one thing to another. I.e., I want to be a teacher, but I have the summers off while I go to grad school. So that summer, they might be great employees, but you're going to lose them in the fall when they go to grad school. And it's daunting because you're saying, no, don't. I have potential for you.
Like
but
you.
But yeah, and so it's hard. And you are constantly interviewing. This state, and I'm sure Amy will agree with me, is not one thriving of hospitality people. We do have some great schools, but a lot of the young people, as we talked a couple weeks ago with
Chef Patrick.
Yeah, Chef Patrick from mm-hmm. Lakes Region Community College, that a lot of these young folks want to go out and try the big cities. You know, it can be tough for us, you know, businesses here, us smaller businesses here, that, you know, we want these young folks to stay here so we can nurture them.
All right, does Chipotle perhaps have the answer to this? Maybe you've heard about this the last week. They have decided they're going to pay for college, not only for their full-time staff, but for part-time employees as well. I don't know where the strings are or what the qualifiers are, but is that opening a can of worms for what you two do?
Of course. Of course it is. I mean, yeah. Benefits are important. I mean, mm-hmm. we can all, Amy and I can sit here and say, oh, I recognize your birthday, or I send out little star cards for when you do something great or have a holiday party and a summer barbecue. But the bottom line is people want to feel that there's a future and they worry about their future. The economy can be unsettling. Politics cause a lot of that, of what's going on in the economy, what's going on with the national debt, what's going on with gas prices. These folks are worrying about that, and they're looking to us for answers. And again, funny off air, we said about how the human resources angle is not something that you necessarily know down in your heart and your skill set, but you learn it really quick.
Sure. We just have another minute or two. I want to wrap up with Amy. Contact, how people can find you, websites, so that they hear you today, and if for some reason they never heard of LaBelle Winery, I don't know how that's possible, they can find out more.
Oh, sure. Thanks. You know, I invite all of your listeners to please come over for a wine tasting or for dinner or lunch in our bistro. On the weekends, we do tours on the hour, every hour, throughout the day till 5 o'clock. So come on over, get an in-depth tour of the wine cellar, learn about the winemaking process in New Hampshire, see the tanks, smell the barrels. It's pretty awesome. So I encourage you guys to do that. You can do that by visiting LaBelle Winery NH, like newhampshire.com, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and all those places.
Well, you're partnering with so many great people, including my friends at Hobblebush Books, because I'm a writer, and I love that you have the author series as well. well, which is a perfect setting for that and many other things that are related to cooking and wine and just enjoying life in general. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure to be with you both.
All the times I've interviewed you, it's never been in person, so it was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amy.
All right, we'll be back here in just a couple of moments, and we're going to get into something a little bit different, but something that I think a lot of people will be interested in, and that is the Manchester Food Co-op, which continues to grow and eventually have as its goal its own retail outlet, and we'll see where that stands. Stephen Freeman from the board of Manchester Food Co-op joining us after the top of the hour on The Pulse, Food for Thought on WTPL.